Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I've just had Oilers head coach Jay Woodcroft join us. Taya, the Royal Pizza, Pizza Pasta, and so much more. Edmonton owned and operated for over 50 years. For a menu and a list of 15 Edmonton and area locations, go online to royalpizza.ca or download the Royal Pizza app from the App Store. The Stauffer recommendation, the Mediterranean Chicken at Royal Pizza. We are going to head off to the River Creek Resort and Casino Hotline and be joined by the president and the CEO of the American Hockey League. He had two stints in the Oilers organization in a senior management role. He was also the GM of the Columbus Blue Jackets for a number of seasons. We welcome back to the show, again, the president and CEO of the American Hockey League, Scott Housen. Hello, Scott. How you doing?
I'm good, Bob. How's everything in Edmonton? I hear it's pretty hot up there these days.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. It's been for about the last week and a half. I went out to Kelowna and Vancouver for a couple weeks, and it was smoking hot out there as well. So it's a bit of a tough go. I know you're probably watching the NHL Network down there with the World Juniors taking place. I mean, confluence of events, long Oilers playoff run, ticket prices. People are texting the show today. 30 degrees outside. It was 32 on Saturday, and I was in the building to watch Canada and Czech, Scott. So, and obviously what's going on with Hockey Canada as well. There's lots happening, but tough sell in August, to say the least. Maybe you can educate our listeners. Where are you living these days?
I'm living in Springfield, Massachusetts, a suburb called Longmeadow, and that's where the AHL head office is. It's been here for probably since the league existed, 86 years ago. Jack Butterfield was here and Eddie Shore was here, and the American League used to be pretty much strictly a New England league, so it made sense for the head office to be here.
Yeah, and now the American League, Scott, you oversee. Are you going into year three? I'm thinking, is that right? Year three is the president CEO of the...
Year three, that's correct, yeah.
You guys are literally everywhere, aren't you, now? Like, you, let's... how many, off the top, how many different states are you in right now?
Oh, I don't know. I'd guess 15 or 16. We're in five provinces now, with Calgary coming into Alberta and putting their farm team in the Saddle Dome. So we're across the U.S., coast to coast, and almost across the Canada, coast to coast, not quite on the East Coast in Canada.
Did you kind of get back to normal last year as the season progressed in the AHL, given all the challenges with COVID?
Yeah, we did. We got hit pretty hard, U.S. Thanksgiving till about mid-January with Omicron, and we had to postpone around 78 games. We extended the season by 6 days. We fit all the games in, and we got a full playoff, and we had an expanded playoff this year with 23 teams qualifying instead of 16. So we had a full schedule. Yeah, we were pretty much back to normal. As soon as we followed the NHL's lead, and as soon as the NHL went to only testing symptomatic people, that put everybody pretty much back to normal and allowed us to proceed fairly regular. We still limited what the players could do community-wise and in and amongst the public. I think that's going to go away this year, and we're going to be completely back to normal, other than you will have some sort of testing or, you know, and dealing with unvaccinated, unvaccinated people.
Yeah, I ended up testing positive for COVID. I've already got my fourth shot now, but got the third shot in September. I was one of the last guys that was with the Oilers traveling party, Scott. So I ended up in Chicago for 5 days and then flew to Bakersfield because, you know, I had to stay in the States for 11 days before coming back to Canada. And at that time, they had very limited seating for, you know, the games in Bakersfield. How much were you guys affected overall in terms of from the business end? I mean, you've got some very different scenarios. You've got some teams that are owned by their NHL parent team. You have other teams I think a Hershey and Wilkes-Barre as an example that have been longstanding AHL franchises that have been basically run, you know, a little certainly differently than maybe some of the other clubs. Did it really sort of undercut the business a bit, or you know, was it fairly extensive, or did it, was it sort of mitigated as the season went on?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was extensive. We finished, just to give you an example, we finished with the fourth highest ticket revenue, overall ticket revenue that we've had. So that's pretty good. I'd say we were off about 10% of our highest year for ticket revenue. And really, there weren't many restrictions here in the States. We had to overcome the, you know, our Canadian teams had to overcome, you know, some severe restrictions there. I know Belleville, Manitoba, Laval, Toronto all had zero capacity for a good 5 or 6 weeks. Abbotsford was restricted to 50%. So that's where most of the restrictions came in, was in Canada. And in the States, it was, there weren't really many attendance restrictions.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Canada. Calgary's now moved their farm team to Calgary. So we now have a, you've now got basically six of the seven Canadian teams with their Canadian AHL affiliates in Canada. Is this problematic for the league a bit, or how do you kind of work around that?
No, it's not problematic at all. We, the only thing I'd say is that the Pacific Division and the Oilers were part of establishing the Pacific Division, I think it's 6 years ago now, and I was part of that group working for the Oilers at the time. And, you know, it was a nice five-team division. They could bus everywhere and, you know, with development at the forefront. And now that, you know, the law of unintended consequences, that's now grown to 10 teams, and it's a lot more spread out. You've got a team in Tucson. You've got a team in Abbotsford. Now you have a team in Calgary. So Henderson, which is in Las Vegas. So it's really become spread out. So it's sort of changed that model in the Pacific Division. But as far as the league goes, it hasn't had a drastic impact at all.
Here we go. We got a texter, Jensen, out of going by the handle Ogo Pogo. Bob, are the Condors considering moving to the Okanagan next year? Wow, I'm not sure what the relation. I think Bakersfield's doing pretty well, isn't it, Scott?
Yeah, I get no sense that the Oilers are interested in moving out of Bakersfield. It did suffer a little bit through COVID, that market, but I think the Oilers are quite happy in Bakersfield, and there's no intention for them to move anywhere right now that I've heard of.
Scott, you're still the number one developmental league for the National Hockey League. How many, can you maybe educate our listeners on how many AHL or pro veterans you're allowed per team and what the game total is, just so you can maybe educate the people out there?
Yeah, it's 260 games. You're allowed five players. Goalies, you can have as many veterans as you want. So goalies are a separate category. But you're allowed, as far as skaters go, you're allowed to dress five skaters that have played more than 260 games. Actually six skaters that have played, you know, in the 260, 280, 300. There's one exempt player too. So at the end of the day, you can have six veterans in your lineup. And everybody else has to be under that 260 games threshold.
So, and we're talking NHL or American Hockey League games, does Europe count?
Europe counts if you played as, Europe wouldn't count if you played as an 18 or 19 year old, like some kids play in the Swedish Elite League as juniors.
Right.
They don't count those games. But once you turn pro age and you've played 40 games in the Swedish Hockey League, then they would count as games, yeah.
Yeah. Are there teams that are at one or two veterans during the course of the season? I mean, I'm going to circle back to Hershey and Wilkes-Barre, and for that matter, the Marlies. I mean, historically, they've spent money on guys on one-way deals. That's one way to do it. But they've always seemed to me to have, you know, been at that five- or six-player threshold for their farm teams. How many teams in the league go the other route?
Not many. Not many go all young. I would say it would be a very rare occurrence where you would watch a game with one team having only one or two veterans. There might be a team that does three or four regularly, but one or two, not. I would say that's very rare.
Okay. Look, it's kind of interesting. Scott Housen joining us. You replaced Dave Andrews in the Oilers organization to run the farm team all those years ago. Was it in Hamilton at that time?
No, it was in Cape Breton.
It was out in the Cape. Oh, that's how far back we're going.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Cape Breton. We moved it. I was there for 2 years, and we moved it to Hamilton after that.
Okay, and now, of course, actually, I saw Steve Stales is in town. I saw him yesterday at the Starbucks in Twilliger around 10 o'clock. Speaking of Hamilton, he's with the they now have, obviously, an OHL franchise. So is it a different league, Scott, from all those years that you kind of ran the farm team for the Edmonton Oilers, circa late 90s into before you went to the Columbus Blue Jackets in 2007? Is the AHL a considerably different league now than maybe it was, you know, going back 20 years ago?
Yeah, it's different in a lot of ways. The business has grown. Our geography, the footprint is just massive now, as we spoke about earlier. So, you know, it used to be basically a regional Northeast league of 16, 17, 18 teams. And that's when I was, you know, we had the five Atlantic Division clubs in Atlantic Canada. And we had, you know, 10 or 11, 12 teams down here, you know, in the eastern part of the states, and now it's completely different, and we've moved into bigger markets, and the other thing that's happened with our league is development's really taken over, and I credit Dave a lot for that. He had the foresight to see that and instituted this development rule that we talked about, where you can only have six players that have played over a certain number of games on the ice each night, and the NHL team saw this. The salary cap came in 2004, and they saw that we need to develop, and we saw a lot of our teams get bought by NHL teams, and so they can control the whole operation and control the development and move them closer, and that was the that's what happened with the Pacific Division. Is all those teams, all the Western-based teams, wanted to move their teams closer so they could be more in touch with the development of their players.
We're joined right now by Scott Housen. Scott, you spent all those years in two different stints with the Edmonton Oilers. Did you watch the playoff run at all?
Oh, yeah, I did, yep. Yeah, as much as I can. I mean, I was watching our own playoffs and traveling a lot, but I did see a number of games, and it was nice to see them break through that barrier and start advancing now, and hopefully there's better things to come for the Oilers.
All right. Well, you were part of the staffs in different roles. I know back in the 14-15 time frame, you were doing more amateur back then, right?
I was doing half amateur, half pro. I'd sort of turn my attention to the amateur in the second half of the season, yes.
What do you think it's easier from an analytics perspective? Do you think it's easier for analytics to potentially impact amateur or pro? You've worked in both.
Yeah, I would say it's easier to impact in pro. You just don't have the same information that you have at pro that you just can't get your hands on that information in amateur. It's growing, it's coming, but I think in pro, you just have a bigger advantage.
I know the 2015 draft year, obviously McDavid went number one and the Oilers made some trades. The fourth, fifth, and sixth round picks all ended up being defensemen that played in the NHL. None of the guys were particularly big, but Caleb Jones, who just signed a one-year extension in Chicago, he was your fourth round pick. Ethan Bear, who did sign a one-year deal in Carolina, would not surprise me if he gets traded between now and the start of the season. He's, you know, signing a one-year deal at $2 million, and John Marino, a sixth-round pick. I mean, you guys did some good work there, didn't you, in that 2015 draft to get three defensemen late?
That's one of the drafts that I'm most proud of, because we went into that draft, as you remember, we had a lot of picks, and we traded some of the early ones, and ended up with picking Connor, and then waiting for a long time, and we made three really good picks, and to get a guy like John Marino in the sixth round, it's too bad it didn't work out for the Oilers. When I used to go watch him play after we drafted him, right, you could see that he had all kinds of potential, big, strong guy that could move and make a play. I can't tell you I thought he was going to make the NHL right away. He made it right out of college, basically. But that was a tremendous draft by the Oilers.
Well, 2017 draft, Edmonton got Yamamoto in the first round, and they got third round guy by the name of Stuart Skinner. And the goaltending evolution's an interesting one. You do get an extra year, Scott. You know this as a former general manager with Columbus and your time at Edmonton as well. But it is interesting to watch the progression of goaltenders work their way up, sometimes starting in the ECHL after playing junior in college, then into the AHL to get their shot at the National Hockey League. It's a little bit different route than it is for the positional players, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and Stewart's a great example of that. He had a, if you remember, we drafted him, and then he had a terrific run in the Memorial Cup. I think he got traded to Swift Current, and he was, you know, arguably the best goalie in the WHL, but he had his hiccups. He needed to go to the ECHL, and it's just been a very gradual progression for him, and I'm just thrilled for him that now it looks like he's on the precipice of being a full-time NHL goalie. So good for him. He put the work in, and that's what a lot of the players don't understand is it's a lot of work. And if you talk to some of these pros like a Stuart Skinner, they would tell you that it's a lot of work, and they didn't realize that when they were coming out of junior.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. Scott, what's the biggest, just to wrap up, we're going to circle back to your current role in the American Hockey League as president and CEO. What's the biggest challenge that you guys have that you're facing right now?
Well, I think after getting through COVID, now it's getting everybody's feet back on the ground and growing our business. It's been tough. There was reluctance. Not only were there restrictions, there was reluctance for people to come out, some people to come out and gather. And now we've just got to get that back to normal. I mean, this league was on a record pace going into March of 2020 when the pandemic hit. And now we've got to get back to those levels. And I'm confident we will. We've got a new franchise coming in. Seattle's farm team, I think, is going to be a home run in Coachella Valley, California. And I think our revenues are going to take off. But we've got a lot of work to do to get there.
Scott, as always, great stuff. We'll catch up with you during the season, okay?
Yep. Look forward to it, Bob. Take care.
There you go. That is Scott Housen, who was the assistant general manager for the Edmonton Oilers from about, I'm going to say about 1998 or 99 to 2007, went to become the GM of Columbus from 07 to 2012-13, during the course of that lockout shortened year in 2013, got let go by Columbus, resurfaced in Edmonton from 13 until 2019, whereupon he became the president and the CEO of the American Hockey League. It's interesting, when Scott left, was relieved of his duties by Columbus, Edmonton, Vancouver with Mike Gillis, Philadelphia, and Detroit with Ken Holland were the four teams that were all looking to bring Holland or Housen in as senior executive, and he would go on and spend the next six seasons in Edmonton from 2013 to 2019. It is 1:52 in Edmonton. When we come back, we'll wrap up Oilers Now. It's all good. We are going to go to a list in Oilers history at 1:53 in Edmonton. Here's Brendan Escott for New West Travel.
You see, we get chit-chatting, and I lose track of what's going on. Yeah, we talked about it a little earlier on. Back in 1956, longtime Oilers player, coach, and general manager Craig McTavish, born in London, Ontario. Oilers signed him ahead of the 1985-86 season as part of three Stanley Cup wins as a player, and then coached the team back to the final in 2006. Then it filled front office roles until his departure for a brief coaching stint in the KHL. Of course, this offseason, catching on again with St. Louis, the team who he retired as a player with, Bob, in 96-97. He'll work as an assistant there.
So Craig's the GM of the team. Yours truly had an abscessed tooth and could not get it looked at until Monday, and we had a Saturday game in Vancouver. So I went in late Thursday afternoon. They gave me a bunch of T3s. And Friday I went to fly with the Edmonton Oilers, and Craig had brought his daughter on the plane. And so I fly with the team to Vancouver, and I tend to have a sugar-free rock star every morning. So I had like six T3s over the previous 12 hours or something. I'm 240 at the time, whatever. I can handle it. And they decided to, I had a Bailey's and coffee on the plane, and lo and behold, I passed out and at the front of the plane. And MacT's over top of me when I wake up, and TD Force is there, and Craig goes, Stoff, I'm glad you woke up. That's important. He goes, but I will tell you this, about 3 years ago, I would have been the first guy to open up that door and push you right out of it as we were flying. So he always had a great sense of humor. Craig McTavish, birthday. Happy birthday to him today. Dave Campbell has Inside Sports. He's guest host tonight for Reed Wilkins. What has Dave got rolling?
Yeah, lots of Elks talk. You're going to hear from Lions color analyst Julio Caravata on what's been an unbelievable season for Nathan Rourke. I mean, it's got to be special to be a fan of the Lions right now. And you get Elks this week as well with Morley Scott talking about a regroup here at 2-7.
All right. Tomorrow, Mark Spector in studio. Spec will join us for the Horses and Horse Race in Alberta, presenting Western Canada's biggest day in racing, the 93rd running of the Canadian Derby. This Saturday, August 20th at Century Mile. Tickets are available now. Have a magnificent Monday, everybody. Back at you tomorrow. Up next, a global news weather traffic update with Kevin Robertson, followed by Rob Breckenridge from 2 to 3, then the 6:30 Chet Afternoons with Jalen Nye. So long, everybody.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
3 nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.